Thank you. Good after morning. I'm the last thing between you and lunch, and I'll continue on with what's nice. It was nice to see some of the really fine scale stuff in the ag fields, and I'm on a kind of a larger or a wider scale in terms of watershed. And so I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the work we've been doing on the Skaneateles Lake watershed to try to assess the effects of best management practices. And I have to recognize my co-author, who you just heard from. This is the modeling that some of the modeling work that appears in here was a direct result of Sony's PhD work, and you'll see all the wonderful graphics and ArcGIS that's all of Sony's doing. And I just have a little bit of statistical analysis to add to it. Okay, so we had support from this from SUNY ESF, US EPA, which funded it, the Onondaga County Soil Water Conservation District, and the Skaneateles Lake Watershed Program, and the Syracuse Department of Water, and also private landowners, without which we had a series of, show you a series of monitoring sites that, around the lake on some very nice lake frontage where people have beautiful properties, and they're very kind to let us have access to that for several years. So here's a picture of Skaneateles Lake. It's one of the premier finger lakes. It's about 16 miles long, about a wide, and its widest point is a little over a mile wide. It's a beautiful clear lake. It's a source of water for the Syracuse metropolitan area, about 200,000 folks. And one of the things, like the New York City watershed, the thing we have in common is the avoidance of filtration. And so that means there's this water is withdrawn directly and treated, but not filtered. And of course, that saves many millions of dollars, as it does in New York City, not only from not having to build a plant, but not having to have the maintenance, the annual operating costs. So we proceed on this filtration avoidance on the good management practices and the quality of the water. And so this is a pretty big impact, and so there's a lot at stake here in terms of good water quality. So one of the issues is the land use, of course, and this watershed is about almost half ag in terms of agricultural land use, both for crops and dairy, and about 40% forest. And so it's that 48% ag that kind of gives us potential for problems for non-point source pollution. And of course, there's about 5 or 6% residential, and some little bit of other uses. So the objective of this study was to assess the overall impacts of BMPs on maintenance of water quality in the sub-watersheds of Skaneateles Lake watershed. And so here's the problem, of course, is the typical way to do this would be to analyze pre and post. You'd have a few years of monitoring data and then come in and put in the factors and then monitor for 3 or 4 years afterwards. And that was rather impossible. First of all, this is pretty much an ungauged watershed. We didn't really have much in the way of prior water quality data. There was a very small sub-watershed. In fact, so small it was hard to believe they collected this, but USGS did some work for during the 1990s looking at water quality on a really small section. And that's pretty much all that we had in terms of stream watershed data. And it's in 2005, because of this emphasis on land use, they started the Soil Water Conservation District started a very aggressive implementation plan to take care of all these in terms of water quality with farm management plans and very aggressive installation of BMPs. Millions of dollars in the past bunch of years have been allocated to kind of maintain this water quality and put these practices in. Okay. So this was part of the Skaneateles Lake Watershed Ag Program. It started in 1994. And these customized whole farm plans were, and a lot of these are through federal grants with some cost sharing with the individual landowners. But there's, in terms of participation of farmers, it's very high. About more than 90% of the farms are participating. So here we are in this environment where all these practices have been simultaneously going in, and we're trying to understand exactly, have some idea of what the positive impacts were. And here's just an example. So many, many practices on a farm-by-farm basis. So there was a lot of water protection, a lot of revamping of roads and isolating cows and so forth. All the whole suite of best management practices were being applied. Here's one, a lot of concrete pads installed and some of that runoff going out to grass filter strips and just all over. So the whole watershed is being kind of attacked in terms of maintaining water quality. Okay. So the premise is how can we, in this kind of environment, what kind of tools do we have to be able to make some kind of rational assessment of the positive impacts? And so we started thinking about watersheds, and the premise was forest watersheds have very high water quality, and so represented that by concentration of water quality in forests. And agriculture has the high potential anyways for non-point source pollution production for all the reasons that have been talked about. And this reduces water quality. And so the premise is that the BMPs reduce non-point source pollution, and therefore maybe perhaps one way to think about assessing them
would be, as an indicator of BMPFX, it's to kind of gauge the forested agriculture watersheds, sub-watersheds, versus the ag watershed. And so if we could think about maybe if water quality of premises, if we could minimize water, the difference in water quality from forests with water quality ag, that would be some indication that these of the degree of effectiveness. Okay. So here's a picture of the watershed. It's New York State. It's in central New York, right about in the middle. And here's the watershed, this beautiful watershed. Here are all our sampling points. And a little closer look at that, we had several sub-watersheds, some of those forested, some ag. So the two forested watersheds, Grout Brook in the southern part and Bear Swamp Stream, they're about 70 to 73% forested. So we consider those as primarily forested watersheds. Then we moved up to the northern end. We had a couple of sub-watersheds that were dominantly agricultural, and this was Shotwell Brook and Harold Brook. And, of course, there's some forest in there. And then in 2008, we added a couple of additional small watersheds, a Hardscrabble Brook and Fall Brook. And these were dominantly ag. So we refer to these as small ag, and forested watersheds. But we did a variety of work on this, and one of those we monitored event flows with ISCOs. We monitored the flow with bubble flow velocity meters, and we measured several things. We'd collect our samples. We'd measure total suspended sediments by gravimetric. We did total nitrogen and total phosphorus. We did a perchlorosulfite digestion. We did nitrates and ammonium concentrations and phosphate, or what we call soluble reactive phosphorus, and we had a system of a brand Luby autoanalyzer. The TP we did by spectrophotometer, and the TSS and TP loads were calculated as the weighted concentration by the discharge. And so we monitored all the events, and we developed the hydrographs, and then we could do these collections. Okay. And so we actually did we did stream stage development to get the velocity flow, and we had four or five samples in each of these streams across the range of conditions to come up with the stage discharge relationship, so we got the flow. And using the bubble velocity data, we just transferred the flow based on the nifty little equation we could plug into the machine. Okay. And so we analyzed these data. One way we did it, we started looking at concentrations for the monitoring data. And so we looked at this model thinking that the concentration was a function of several things. It's this average concentration of the TSS or nutrient, the overall mean. And then we had an effect for land use. This was forest versus ag. We took out an effect for the watershed, and then we had this error term. So that was basically the statistical analysis model. Okay. And we did some modeling. So we had ANAGNIPS, this phenomenally difficult model with something 400 parameters and over 20 data steps. It's just monstrous model. Sony spent, I think, a whole year just kind of parameterized that model. And now it tells me that she'll never do ANAGNIPS again, and now she's a confirmed SWAT user. So, but at any rate, it's a rather complex simulation model with a daily simulation. And the parameters are just horrendous to collect. But this was thanks to Sony's GIS expertise, she was able to use some of these tools to pull these various layers together. Okay. And the nice thing about ANAGNIPS, in spite of all its difficulty, was this ability for source accounting to take and kind of divvy up the inputs in terms of the loads and track those back up the watershed on sub-watershed basis based on these discrete cells. So essentially going back and attributing a certain amount of the load, apportioning the load among the individual cells in the watershed. And this turned out to be a pretty nice tool that I think probably the greatest benefit of this model. And so we took some of those data and the modeling data, and we tried to ask the question, does non-point source pollutants, can you differentiate between forest and ag? In other words, if we had these discrete areas of source pollutants, we have the nitrate, the phosphorus loads, and the sediment loads, can you take this data and just say, okay, all the ag pieces give us a high load or a low load, or all the forestry pieces give us a high load or low load? So we try to say, can we differentiate among forest and ag land use, that backing up the cells based on their differences in loads? And to do that, we have these physical data output for each of these cells, and we pretty much use sediment and total nitrogen. Those are the two variables we use. So we calculated the specific yields and apportioned those up. And these specific yields are in kilograms per hectare per year. And we had these averaged over a three-year period. And finally, to analyze that, we used a discriminant analysis, and the the function was the function that we could say land use, either ag or forestry, that's a function of sediment and total N. So if you could predict land use based on the combination of sediment and total N, these two non-point source pollutants, that would indicate that land use had a pretty profound effect. Okay. And we then use classifications. We use the cross-validation to take that function and then say what the classification was for predicting land use, either forestry or ag, on the basis of those pollutant inputs. And so the classification accuracy is a measure of how good that function was, how well we could do that. So here are our results. So these are some of the statistical results for the event and low flow monitoring. So I'm presenting just the event flow. Okay. So here's over 3 years, in 2007, 2008, and 2009. We had 13 major events, 13 and then 8 in 2009, and aggregated by land use. These are the agricultural, which would be Shotwell Brook and Harrow Brook, and the forest, which would be Bear Swamp Stream and Grout Brook. And so these are showing now the significant differences in nitrate concentrations. So if you look at all these, and these concentrations overall in terms of for ag are relatively small. So these are concentrations at the outlet. These are volume-weighted nitrate concentrations. And so for 2007, based on 13 events, these volume-weighted concentrations were about 0.4 higher, so maybe about 40% greater nitrate concentrations in ag and forest. And those concentrations in 2008 were the same. They're a little bit higher. These are statistically significant from ag versus forest, 0.76 versus 0.57. And then 2009, we added these two small ags, Hardscrabble Brook and Fall Brook. You see there wasn't much difference between Hardscrabble and Fall and the larger agricultural ones, but still significantly higher than forestry. Okay? And the same was true with the same pattern with total nitrogen. So here we have these statistically significant increases in volume-weighted concentrations. But the thing that's rather notable here is these concentration differences are relatively small. So when I look through the literature and look at typical nitrate concentrations of ag watersheds, typical streams going through ag watersheds, these concentrations are relatively low compared to those typical numbers, and the same with TN. Total phosphorus was kind of a strange thing. We didn't see any differences. It's kind of one anomaly, or perhaps that the total phosphorus on a forested system was greater than the average concentration of the ag system in this particular year. And that's kind of anti-intuitive, and I don't know why we had some. I don't really have a good explanation. Okay. The soluble reactive phosphorus, fortunately for water quality, but unfortunately for us, all those numbers were below detection limits. Okay, so our detection limits for the Brand-Lewy system, we were unable to see that, so we had no data for statistical analysis. In terms of total suspended solids, no difference between forest and ag. And again, these are at the outlets, and based on event flow, the outlets of those major streams. No difference in ammonium and H4 concentrations. And pretty much, for the most part, no difference in total P, okay, and soluble reactive P below detectable concentrations. Okay, so wrapping that up, we see a definite signal from agriculture versus forested in terms of nitrates and in terms of total nitrogen. That signal is very small on these systems. Now we go back to the event flow, and we're going looking at the ANAPS modeling. And so these are these are averaged over 3 years, the specific yields. And these are the two forested, Bear Swamp and Grout Brook. Okay. And these are the ags. And you look at the results of these, and it's pretty interesting that both the highest and lowest specific yields come from agricultural watersheds. Okay. So the other yields are on the forested watersheds. So basically, there's no measurable there's no large difference between the forest and ag watersheds in terms of specific yields for these sediments and nutrients. Okay. And here's some of the nice things. Here's the source accounting. This shows the source accounting for sediment load for Harold Brook. Okay. And these are the very high ones, so these are fairly high loads, unevenly distributed. Turns out that the nitrogen loads are pretty closely associated with the high sediment loads. Not perfectly, but pretty closely associated. And finally, looking at the classification. So here's the question, can you accurately classify land use based on the sediment and nitrogen loads? And you can't. Here are the forested Grout Brook and Bear Swamp. So here we're classifying from ag into ag, and there's only 25% success rate of doing that for Grout Brook and 14% Okay, and the forests a little higher, these are forested watersheds. So land use doesn't really come out clearly in terms of the loads. And that's true for the ag watersheds. Okay, 32% ag into ag for Shotwell Brook. It improves a little bit as we go down, the classification accuracy. But also, as we go down, we get into very small sub-watersheds. And so with that, from all of these, looking at trying to do this, I've come up with some conclusions. That is that nitrate and total N concentrations are slightly higher at the outlets of watersheds dominated by ag compared to forest. And the differences are relatively modest. And that I think is pretty important. Secondly, within watersheds, sediment and total nitrogen specific yields are not reliable predictors of ag versus forest land use. And that's kind of comforting. Okay. And so to me, putting these things together and thinking about them in total, it kind of suggests that the implementation of BMPs has been effective in protecting water quality. Had those BMPs not been effective, those modest changes in concentrations at the base would have been very large. And had those BMPs not been installed, I also think that the sediment loads would have been very effective predictors of ag versus watershed versus forest watershed land use. How am I doing time-wise? Probably pretty much the end. Thanks.
Thank you, Ross.